This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Ben Catcher, is the creator of the comic strip Julius Knipple, Real Estate Photographer. The strip follows Knipple on his journey through the edges of New York City, through neighborhoods Catcher has renamed, like the Cheap Novelty District and the Cheap Merchandise District. Catcher has a new book called The Beauty Supply District. Last month, he won a so-called Genius Award, a MacArthur Fellowship of approximately $500,000. The MacArthur Foundation praised his work for conveying an ironic, compelling, and bittersweet nostalgia for the detritus of city life, for capturing the streets, small shops, and lunch counters of a remembered New York. A few years ago, Catcher teamed up with radio producer David Isay, who also won a MacArthur last month, to create short radio dramatizations of the Julius Knipple strips. Several of them ran on NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday. Let's hear one before we meet Catcher. The announcer is played by Dick DeFreitas. Ben Catcher is the narrator, and Jerry Stiller is Julius Knipple. This will help describe the Cheap Merchandise District.
Ladies and gentlemen, let us stop for a moment in our mad flight and return once again to the city. Here in a low-rent office building on the edge of the Cheap Merchandise District, Julius Knipple, the real estate photographer, suffers on a daily basis the exquisite pleasures of urban decay. Pleasures bought at the expense of countless others who came before him. But we're not here to buy, we're just looking.
In the same way a doctor associates certain physical signs with the end of a human life, Mr. Knipple knows what to expect at the last stop on any subway line.
A trophy manufacturer. Movie theater converted into a business school. The offices of a wedding orchestra. A dietetic candy store. A bus driver's uniform supply store. An illegal franchise of a defunct fast food chain.
However, these last manifestations of private enterprise can linger on for a quarter of a century or longer.
A plastic slipcover showroom.
Now that you've heard about the Cheap Merchandise District, let's hear about the Beauty Supply District, which is the title of Ben Catcher's new book of comic strips.
Yeah, the Beauty Supply District is a commercial center of this imaginary city where people deal in the business of aesthetics, I mean, in all its forms, from there's a symmetry shop. There's a proportions surveyor. There's a two-dimensional aluminum contour extruder. It's where people go to buy aesthetic advice and services.
Which shops do you think you could make use of?
Probably the sort of a shop of narrative invention, or the forms of narrative invention, if I could sort of... I mean, within the strip, there's an artist who says this is the fantasy of many artists, that they wish they could sort of buy the solutions to a lot of their artistic problems, like most people can buy things. And this is my... depiction of that place existing in the real world and sort of going out of business toward the end of the strip. It disappears.
Some people really have this desire to go to the new happening hotel with the fabulous new furniture and the bar with all the happening people, or the new restaurant that has the latest nouveau cuisine, or the shopping mall that has the greatest new boutiques. You're really attracted to diners that have crusted food on the table left over from previous dinners. Where the whole room smells kind of like ketchup and runny mayonnaise, and you're interested in shops that sell. Cheaply manufactured things from abroad. you're interested in kind of cracked streets and old signs. Why is it, do you think, that that's what interests you, that that's what you're drawn to?
That's, I don't know, I'm interested. I think most businesses age fairly quickly. I mean, the newest development, the newest hotel, you know, within a week has a certain veneer of use. And I think in a city, that happens at a tremendous pace. If you're in a small town, things are painted over more frequently. The sort of traces of time are more easily effaced. In New York City, you can go to the newest development in Times Square, and it already looks like it's had it, and it's worn out, and people are ready to, you know, cash in their corporate interest and move on to the next thing. So I don't know. It's that feeling of wear that you get in a city, and that's just because of the number of people and the intensity of usage of things are used up in a city. I think that's maybe something I like to talk about, that pace of use, that speed of decay.
Do you take trips for inspiration? Are there parts of the city that you go to just to get inspiration for your work?
I go there on other business. I have to drop off a strip at a newspaper. I don't really get around enough just on errands. But I like this neighborhood in the low 30s, sort of between Broadway and Fifth Avenue. I like the remnants of the Garment District. It's a little further west. Those are sort of places I enjoy walking around. But
what do you like about the old Garment District?
Well, there are some interesting places to eat in these areas because they serve businessmen. Sort of the last dairy restaurant is not far from there, the last dairy in Midtown. I like to see these remnants of light manufacturing in New York. There's still some assembly work done, some finishing, I guess, done in that neighborhood. Merchandise is still pushed around in the street.
One of the ways that cities are changing now, particularly Manhattan, is that neighborhoods that used to be one ethnic group are now another ethnic group. As more new immigrants move into Manhattan, and a neighborhood that might have once been Jewish might now be Dominican, or a neighborhood that might have once been one ethnic group might be Vietnamese now. Do you find that places with which you had certain associations or certain memories are becoming, in a way, very unfamiliar to you because there's a different culture that's taken it over that is very interesting but doesn't connect with your memories of childhood or even your memories of the city?
No, just the opposite. When I'm in a big Chinese cafeteria down on in Chinatown, I feel exactly like I did when I was in a big Jewish dairy restaurant. It's the same feeling, this immigrant crowd handling food in a certain way. A certain urgency to the business, and it's actually, it completely transcends my, you know, ethnic background. I mainly frequent restaurants of other ethnic backgrounds because I feel closer to those at the moment. I think that interest very much transcends ethnicity. I mean, living in New York, it's so relative. I mean, to live in one, you know, ethnic world, you really have to, go out of your way to avoid the world. I mean, that's one of the great things about a cosmopolitan life. You're not trapped by your own ethnicity. No, I don't feel that at all. You know, once in a while I miss some Eastern European dish that, you know, it's not easy to find anymore in Manhattan. But, you know, there are a million other things. There are other other cuisines that are sort of just as appealing to me. So, yeah, I'm not a big, that's easily substituted.
My guest is Ben Catcher, creator of the comic strip Julius Knipple, Real Estate Photographer. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Ben Catcher. His new book of Julius Knipple comics is called The Beauty Supply District. When did you first get interested in comics?
I was a very small child before I could read them, basically. I saw them in candy stores, and I was attracted by the drawing, I think, and the color and the printing. Yeah, but it goes back to my earliest memories.
What were the first comics you drew?
Oh, they were, I don't know, little adventure stories about my cat. I had a cat called Snowball, and I think he had a TV show, I remember, in my comic strip. He was sort of the host of a TV show. That's something I can remember.
You went to art school, didn't you?
Yeah, I did study painting and drawing.
Did you ever think of becoming a painter?
Well, I was a painter. I did paint, so... I did. I did spend years in school painting and drawing. But I always had this sort of fascination with printing and mass reproduction. And it seemed like that was a more appealing way to have my drawings exist in the world.
Was that because they'd be seen by more people because they were mass-produced, or was there something about the process of mass production itself that you liked?
Well, I do like the process, but I like the idea that everyone could own an original printed image, take it home, read it, throw it away, you know. It's the nature of comics, newspaper comics, and I just like that.
When did you start to think about the possibility of comics for adults, comics that would not be about action and adventure or superheroes, but would be, you know, about urban life and about ideas and character?
Yeah, I think when I became an adult and I wanted this form to exist, that's when I began thinking about it. I mean, I always liked to have a story. When I was painting, I had a story behind my paintings. And I just felt it was unfortunate that the word and the image had become divorced. And there's a painting world and there's a writing world, and the two sort of never meet. They are, you know, the word and the image are just ends of the same spectrum, and they can meet. And I sort of knew that they could because I grew up reading comics. And so at some point, I began thinking about using my taste in image making and my taste in writing and somehow bringing them together in this form, this that interested me as a child. So that's basically how that happened.
Now, I want to ask you about a few references in your comics and see what they relate to, if there's anything specific they relate to. Okay, this is something you have in one of your comics. It's a public directory for the Alimentary Canal arranged in alphabetical order by family name. And it says, one could see at a glance the gastrointestinal condition of any person residing in the metropolitan area. So one page, it's kind of like a yellow pages of gastrointestinal disorders. Mm-hmm. So one page is labeled May 19th, 1957. Edis, W. Gastritis, abdomen cramps, sluggish bowels. Eager, A. These are the people's names. Eager, A. Diarrhea, irritable colon, rectal fissures. What inspired that?
Well, part of a city the thing that makes allows a city to function are directories. People have to know where to find things. And the most common directory is the phone book, which gives us names, addresses, and phone numbers. And I just extrapolated that, and I said, well, Wouldn't it be nice to be able to know the gastrointestinal condition of everyone in the phone book? For social purposes, for business purposes, there are, and that's what that came out of. I love to read phone books. I have a phone book from Chicago from the 60s. It's one of my favorite books.
The Directory of the Alimentary Canal.
Hello, Mr. Eagle. I'm calling to discuss our... Oh, I'm sorry to hear that you're not feeling well. I understand. I'm sorry. I understand.
On the top shelf of a bookcase just behind Mr. Knipple's office desk, there sits a single disused and dust-covered edition of a once popular reference work, The Public Directory of the Alimentary Canal. In this case, for the week of May 19th, 1957.
Ealing, William, 35 Pillar Avenue. Gastritis, abdominal cramps, sluggish bowel. Easton, Francis, 274 Acre. Fecal impactment, diverticulitis, hemorrhoids. Eager, Adolf.
Upon its tissue-thin pages, arranged in alphabetical order by family name, one could see at a glance the gastrointestinal condition of any person residing in the metropolitan area.
Emmons, Cynthia. Violent gas.
The directory's two-line summaries were more or less accurate.
Edison, Guy. Diarrhea, irritable colon.
It was culled from a multitude of reports filed each week by a vast, underpaid army of drugstore clerks, plumber's assistants, door-to-door canvassers, and public restroom informants.
Hey, buddy, how's it going in there? I had a big lunch, too. I've been here for 20 minutes. How about you?
Don't bother me.
You work in this building? I do, too. Sonny Biller. What's your name?
Leave me alone.
Hello. It's Martin Weimar calling from Babylonian Dogs to report sales from Monday the 7th to Saturday night. I have Suzanne Galudi, 92 Bark Avenue, who purchased a Jolita do-it-yourself enema kit and a package of hemorrhoidal suppositories. I have a Milton Eagle, who purchased two bottles of Fergitol laxative.
Freddy Catrolis, licensed plumber, calling with an activity report for last week. All right, on Monday, I cleared one obstructed toilet for Gary Jolson of 1892 Jefferson Boulevard. That same afternoon, we had a urinal overflow. Cause unknown.
Shrewd businessmen and successful socialites would not make a move without first consulting the latest edition.
But don't you know, the Nickleworths all have the runs this week. Says so right here. And you were counting on them. Perhaps we should reschedule the spring gala for next month.
Theater openings and restaurant profits hinged upon its authoritative word.
Look, 60 cases of intestinal flu on Roman Boulevard. If you open this week, you'll be playing to an empty house. And Arthur Elbor, the critic from the Evening Prong, has to have a polyp removed. It's no good. Bad timing.
All of this work, this wealth of information, this vast publishing enterprise soon came to naught when the directory ceased publication in the fall of 1958.
Hello, I'd like to speak to Mr. Bomas. Oh, can't come to the phone right now. Yes, I'll call back in 15 minutes.
That radio dramatization of the comic strip Julius Knipple, Real Estate Photographer, was produced by David Isay. Jerry Stiller was the voice of Knipple. We'll talk more with the creator of the strip, Ben Catcher, after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview with Ben Catcher, creator of the comic strip Julius Knipple, Real Estate Photographer. His new book of Julius Knipple comics is called The Beauty Supply District. I remember when I was a kid and on certain Saturdays I'd get taken against my will to, say, the linoleum store or the carpet store.
Right.
And the guy who worked there who'd be chewing this, like, already well-chewed cigar would have to fill out the carbon paper form in triplicate if they bought something. And you deal with stores like that. You deal even with, like, what happens to the carbon paper. I mean, who uses carbon paper anymore? But I wonder if you go through this, too, in the sense that there was, like, nothing I hated more than being in this store on a Saturday, but I'm fascinated by your version of that kind of store in your comic. So did you have that kind of aversion to this part of the world when you were young?
No, I remember. I mean, I probably wanted to be somewhere playing ball or, you know, looking through old comic books. I mean, I think even at the time, I sort of appreciated the atmosphere of these places. I remember my memory of linoleum stores is a sign and all sorts of warnings, clippings from newspapers about children who were killed by falling rolls of linoleum in stores. And I remember there was this real sense of danger in these stores and the smell of that material and the idea of patterns and decoration. It's sort of my earliest memories of decorative art are from going to linoleum stores. So, I mean, I think there was enough going on to fascinate me as a child. You know, whether I wanted to be back home with my comics is another question. But I did enjoy going shopping with my parents and sort of seeing these things. I mean, I preferred linoleum stores to clothing stores. Or toy stores to linoleum stores, but I liked, I think I did have some appreciation of what was going on at the time.
What kind of toy stores did you like? Did you like those cheap novelty kind of toy stores?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite toy store as a kid was a place called Bargain Town, which was in Brooklyn, on Broadway in Brooklyn, under an elevated train line, and it was a vast kind of warehouse of discounted toys. And I mean, as a child, you could just get lost in this place. That was my favorite. I mean, there was a neighborhood toy store. I think children are immediately, I mean, by the age of two or three, they're really, connoisseurs of merchandise. And they have taste in toys, you know. And they appreciate the qualities of toys. So it begins at a really early age.
I want to close with another one of your comics that was dramatized for radio. This is called At the Door of the Candy Store. Would you tell us what inspired this one?
Yeah, that is directly inspired by my father, who that's the one thing he did suffer from was heartburn. And I remember him trying to get a vanilla ice cream to assuage his heartburn. And I think there was a candy store just like in the strip that had just closed. And he had to beg the owner to open it and sell him an ice cream. So this is, it's a directly based on a memory of my father.
I want to tell you, I heard this one in the car with my father, and my father swore that he did the same thing.
Yeah, shows the commonality of heartburn, I guess.
Okay, well, let's hear this strip, and this was based on a comic by Ben Catcher, produced for radio by David Isay, originally broadcast on Weekend Edition Saturday on NPR. Ben Catcher, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you.
I have a terrible heartburn, and only a vanilla ice cream can save me.
These are the sales that are never made.
A cup, a cone, anything!
Grown men and women beg shamelessly before stores already closed for the night, convinced that the card hanging on the door had just been turned.
Do a favor, sell me an ice cream. I see you're in there to do business. Open the door!
They imagine a light still on in the back room where the owner is just now changing his shirt before climbing an inner staircase to his apartment.
Did they hide you and take my money?
Where, on the kitchen table, lies the latest edition of a Yiddish language communist weekly, still unread in its cheap brown paper wrapper.
I beg of you. I'm a sick man.
We heard Jerry Stiller as the voice of Julius Knippel. Ben Catcher was the narrator. Catcher has a new book of Julius Knippel comics called The Beauty Supply District.